Croeso, welcome. It's Podcast Peldroid, episode 107. My name is Russell and I'm in Cardiff, also in Cardiff, though not with me, via Porthaethwy, is Richard Wayne Roberts. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm really good. Really happy to be here, as always.
And what would it be, in Innsbruck via Ellesmere, and before that, Wrexham, is Leon Barton. How are you, sir?
I'm not bad, thank you. Yeah. I'm a bit tired, it's a bit later here, so it's all right.
And you didn't get your afternoon nap, unlike little Marvin.
No, I'm sort of being middle-aged now, I could really do with them.
And you are an hour ahead, obviously, so last time out, you and I, Leon, plus Gaz, we paid tribute to Ashley Williams on his retirement, and then the late Di Davis on his sad passing. Hopefully we did their careers, their legacy justice. Rich, you couldn't join us for that one. Anything to say on Ash and Di?
Well, just to say, I mean, Di, I kind of read up quite a lot more about him after he passed away. And I mean, he's clearly a huge kind of legend and a huge influence. But from my personal point of view, I guess Ash is, I mean, I guess it feels like it's an open and shut kind of thing. He's our best ever captain, comfortably in our best ever 11, the best ever leader. Just a phenomenal career for us, like really, really, truly outstanding. We wouldn't have qualified for the Euros without him. I genuinely don't think we would. There was no one anywhere near his caliber as a centre back, I don't think. And what I kind of found myself thinking about was the game. It was under Toshack where he was played as a defensive midfielder, and he had a really uncomfortable game. It was at home and he was obviously not cut out for it, but not once did he hide. Like through the entire game, he kept showing up for the ball and it didn't quite work out, and he kept on going and kept on going, which I guess speaks volumes to just his personality and his character. I mean, we were incredibly lucky to have him, and he was lucky to have our group as well. So yeah, wonderful, wonderful player, and an amazing representative for vegan footballers as well. Incredible.
There was actually a remarkable amount they had in common, and I'm going into it again because it's all there in the last episode. But both played for Everton, both played for Swansea in the top flight, both played under Toshack, but both had quite a progressive attitude to things like diet and fitness. And I suppose in Di's, you do find those examples now, don't you, in the modern game, but a bit harder to find back in Di's day. You called him a bit of a Renaissance man, Leon, which I think is a lovely, lovely turn of phrase for him.
Yeah, just such an interesting character, and all this stuff sort of come out sort of since he died, about how what a varied life he had and what an interesting life he had, even outside of football. He wasn't hanging on to past glories at all. He was always moving forward. He was interested in a lot of different things, and he pursued those interests. And he was far, far from the sort of cliche of a sort of 70s footballer. I've said this on Twitter. I think there's something sort of very, very Welsh about that, almost like the sort of otherness to Welsh football, and he's personified that. I think.
Opened up a alternative therapy type centre, wasn't it, in Llangollen. Whereas most ex-pros in that era tended to either stay in the game, coaching, scouting, or opening a pub. And I'm probably being a bit unfair there, but that he was of that sort of era. But to open an alternative therapy centre, there can't be many ex-pros from the 70s.
Yeah, and he was involved in a Welsh book and craft shop as well, which I think would also, they put out his autobiography, which we talked about.
Yeah.
Quite a lot, which is, I've been reading, and it's a really good read as well. So it's well worth, if you want to know more about Di Davis, getting hold of that in Welsh or English.
Yeah. I've only got the Welsh one, and it is a good read. So yeah, so that's episode 107. Episode 106. This is episode 107. And before that, episode 105, I was grateful for the company of Rob Phillips from BBC Radio Wales. Stranger to nobody listened to this, and he talked a little bit about sports journalism more broadly, but how he found himself into the world of radio, and we did that for World Radio Day, which was a couple of weeks ago. But back to this episode, I'm waiting patiently on the line in Tonbridge in Kent via Grimsby, well, via lots of places, isn't it, Chase? But via Grimsby is when I met you, when you had a short spell in Brisworth in university, when we met on our first days way back in 1949 or something, whatever it was.
It was a long time ago.
So welcome to the podcast, Jason Campbell.
Thank you for having me.
Spurs fan, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That was an open goal. But that's,
we've all got our cross to bear.
Absolutely, absolutely. So before we talk about Spurs and the three Welsh players who are there at the moment,
tell us, how does a Grimsby lad become a Spurs fan then?
My father was in the RAF, so we moved around a lot. And I did follow Grimsby when I was living there. But I think when I was very young, because I'm a little bit older than Russell, and I don't know about the rest of you guys, I'm 48, 49 this year. So I seem to remember about the age of five, I was given a Spurs shirt. I don't think it was a proper one. I think it was literally like a white T-shirt with a cocker on it. But I supported them ever since the end of Glenn Hoddle, Ozzy Ardiles, and then going through to sort of Waddle and Gazza, players like that, players that were very, very exciting to watch. Managed to get to Tottenham matches when I moved to London after Aberystwyth and a short stay in Kent. And then we moved back down to Tonbridge because of family. And luckily enough, for the last two seasons, I've been a season ticket holder. Well, I say luckily enough, I haven't seen much football this season, but last two or three seasons. So I was there when we were at Wembley and then when we moved into the new stadium, which I do have to say, guys, is an absolutely magnificent building. You have got to go there at some stage.
Yeah, I haven't been yet. I would really like to go. When I was a kid, Spurs were my team. When you had to kind of basically pick a first division team, as it was then. And because my local teams, Wrexham and Shrewsbury Town, were not acceptable answers when your fellow classmates in year two at primary school ask you which team you support. Basically, I chose Spurs because 99% of the football fans at my school supported Liverpool, and I didn't want to. I was always like a contrary little bastard, and I didn't want to be like everyone else who support Liverpool. And so I chose this, one, because nobody else supported him, and two, because of Glenn Hoddle. And he was, along with Mark Hughes, he was my football hero as a kid, and Diego Maradona. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but like Maradona played in Ozzy Ardiles' testimonial alongside Hoddle in 86, 87, something like that. And just like, wow, what if he'd signed for Spurs? What a midfield that would have been. But it's funny enough, like on the BBC website, they do this thing, don't they, where Mark Lawrenson does a predictions every week against celebrity.
A Z-list celebrity, yeah.
A Z-list celebrity, usually someone I've never heard of. It's quite pretty funny. Lawrenson's predictions are pretty funny because I once saw someone put like a league table up of like his predictions for the last 10 years, and it had like Liverpool winning the league by 20 points every season. But he did it once up against Nicky Wire, the bass player from the Manics. Yep. And he was asked why, coming from Blackwood, a Spurs fan. And he just said, Hoddle. That was his answer. Glenn Hoddle. I just worship Glenn Hoddle. I wanted to be like Glenn Hoddle as a player. And I was like, oh, wow, that's like me. That's why I supported Spurs as a kid.
Well, it is a random one. So, you know that, and I didn't realise for years, maybe 15, 20 years, that it was his last game for Spurs. And he it's against Oxford, and he scores, he kind of breaks from his own half, and he sort of puts the ball sort of between the centre-backs and then just absolutely skins one of them. They played a really high line, and he just dummies the keeper and just puts it in front of, you'll have to help me out here, Jace, whichever end it was, at White Hart Lane. And that was right in front of me, because that was where Dennis Powis took, that was where we had our end of season tour that year. And so I saw that goal, and I always recognised it for a quality goal as it is, but I hadn't realised it was his final appearance for Spurs.
Goff again there. Maybe Spurs now. It's 4-3 now for Tottenham. And Hoddle's going through on his own. Oh, and it's in. A superb goal by Hoddle. He salutes the crowd. He gets applause from his manager and the bench and from the Tottenham fans as well. A moment of true mastery.
I mean, he was a totally sublime player. And I think it won't interest you being primarily about Welsh football, but the England side was never built around Hoddle, and it should have been. There are lots of national teams that will say they've had a player that was, you know, if you could have built your team around that player, it could have made such a difference. And you're lucky enough to have Bale at the moment, who steps to the fore every single time. But if the England team at the time had done something around Hoddle, he wasn't trusted. He wasn't trusted as a player because he was skillful and a maverick, I suppose. And a team like Tottenham had, where it was about entertaining. We're always labelled with, aren't we, that we're a team that can entertain, but okay, maybe not now under Mourinho, but we're a team that can that can entertain but not win anything. We're always, oh yeah, maybe if it ends in a one, you might win a cup. But people talk about Spurs being Spursy and always sort of like collapsing towards the end of any decent run. But that team at the time, before Hoddle left, was an absolutely fantastic side. He's still revered. And I know that Glenn Hoddle as a manager, you know, he was revered as a manager at Spurs when he was with us, even though he'd been at Chelsea previously. And obviously the things that he said that have been a little bit controversial and got him into trouble. But he is still referred to as God by the Tottenham faithful. And you still see at the ground people wearing his shirt. It's good to see. He was a genius.
Trust is a word I've got written down here in my notes, and we'll come to that, I think, in respect of the relationship between Bale and Mourinho, or at least the on-pitch, on-field relationship. But you and I, Jace, had a chat. We had a catch-up a couple of weeks ago, and we sort of suggested maybe doing this. You know, we were talking about how he was going at Spurs. Since then, of course, he's really kind of beginning to move through the gears.
He played really, really well on the weekend, and it just feels like he's beginning, Bale, now to find his rhythm. But tell us, first of all, before we go into performances and things like that, what was the consensus, if that's a bit different, to him returning, albeit on loan?
It's pretty much as you'd imagine. Most Spurs fans, you're always going to have Spurs fans who are, oh no, you know, he's lost it, he's going to come back, he's just going to pick up the money and cost the club, and he's never going to be as good as he used to be. But the majority of Spurs fans were just head over heels about it, because it was the return of the prodigal son, for want of a better phrase. I think because it'd been mooted in the press for, you know, the last 2 or 3 years before he actually came back, there was always a story popping up that, oh, he was unhappy, he was going to come back, he wasn't getting the games. And when it actually happened, I did have to pinch myself. I couldn't quite believe that it was happening. And I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know if it meant he was going to come back and be this amazing player that he was before, because we were being warned about his injuries and lack of, not lack of form, but possibly lack of confidence. All the stuff that you hear about, he's not interested in football, he's only interested in golf and all of that. You know, that unfortunately, there is a little bit of a media circus that follows Gareth Bale, not in the same way that it does with somebody like, you know, David Beckham or Gazza or whatever, but in the sense that the English press, I think, love these stories about Gareth Bale and love writing him off and mixing it up a bit so that it can create problems. And I knew that his return back would not mean that he'd be this explosive player that would come straight into the side and be performing miracles for us. I mean, when you think of the Gareth Bale that left that season that he left Spurs, he was just, I very nearly changed my sexuality, I have to say, because he was just phenomenal. And I remember seeing him in some of his early matches, you know, the Gareth Bale of old, when he was still a left back and he had that ridiculous hair that didn't quite cover those enormous ears of his, and he slouched a bit and he was a bit gangly. And then I remember going to a match and at the old White Hart Lane, where I used to get tickets, I was right up in the gods in the corner, but you looked down and you saw him and he was so hench. He was like this V-shape from his shoulders down to his shorts. I know this is sounding a bit like I'm describing the love of my life, some gay Adonis, but it was looking down at this physical change that had happened since the last time I'd seen him playing live. And I could not believe it. And the way he used to boss the pitch was just amazing. That power, those bursts of energy and the skill. So for him to come back, knowing that he was injured when he came back and knowing that we shouldn't expect the Gareth Bale of old, because he was several years older. What was it, 7 years older? I think it is 7 years, isn't it, that he was at Real Madrid. I think people forget he was there a long time, you know, and he won everything. For him to come and be just at the club, it felt good. And from what I've seen on social media and things like that, is that he's very happy to be back. He's very happy to be in a place where he's trusted, where he is wanted. And watching him in the first few games, Russell, it was a bit painful because he was laboured, he was struggling. You could see he was trying. You could really see he was trying his heart out, but he just didn't have that fitness. And of course, if you don't have the fitness, your touch can desert you a little bit. He wasn't quite at the races. But as you will know, the last few games, he's really, really come to the fore.
And we've seen that, haven't we, Rich, with Wales sometimes, where he's coming back from an injury layoff and he just kind of maybe snatches at a couple of shots, a couple of little sort of flicks and things aren't quite coming off. And he is a sort of player who does appear to take his time to get into that groove. Once he's in it, you can't stop him. But we're familiar with that as well, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we certainly witnessed that, I think, towards the end of his time at Real Madrid. But even saying that, he's always been a clutch player for us who will deliver. I mean, and this is even you know, as he kind of fell out of favour with Zidane, he was still delivering for us for the vast part. The kind of convenient narrative of this washed up guy who doesn't really care anymore. Well, it's quite clear he does care about football because he's always turning up for us and he's always doing really well. I think what probably hampered him a lot is working with basically a kind of a yesterday's man trainer in Mourinho. Like, it's not the ideal guy for him in any way, shape or form, but I guess resolved whatever was going on there. And he started to play and he's making the impact, and he will continue to make the impact now for the rest of the season.
He's not played a huge number of games. You know, I'm not going to claim to be a Spurs fan, Jason, that's why you're here. But I was looking back, he's played sort of in the European games. Is this right? Am I fair? He's not playing in the most important games. He's getting some runouts against some of the easier opposition. Is he being kind of coached in that respect back into
form? Yeah,
into
I think
form?
There's an element of that. It's partly to do with trust from Mourinho, in the sense that, you know, Mourinho and his pragmatic sort of approach to football. I'm saying that through gritted teeth because I can't stand the guy as our manager. You don't stop falling out of love with the club, but you can certainly fall out of love with the way that they play football. And under Pochettino, we were spoiled. Now, I would imagine under Pochettino, Gareth Bale would have absolutely shone because he'd have had the kind of player who would really appreciate him for what he brings. I think Mourinho does appreciate him going forward, but as you know, Mourinho is very exacting in terms of players being defensive. It's why Bergwijn gets so many games at the moment, because he will run around and do what Mourinho wants him to do, but he's not particularly doing it up front at the moment. Bale's started three Premier League matches, but yeah, not against top opposition. I think he's come on as sub about five times, a couple of cup appearances and a goal in the FA Cup, and I think seven times in the Europa League. And maybe a substitute appearance as well. So he's enjoyed the space that you get in the Europa League. And so whether you can argue that that's Mourinho coaching him and getting him to a level that he's ready to be at, I don't know. But we did have that stuff in the papers a few weeks ago, about maybe a month or so ago, when Bale apparently was saying he was fit and Mourinho was saying, no, he had a problem. And that worried me at the time. I was thinking, oh, is there something going on here that I'm not sure is good for either Bale or the club? But they do seem to have sorted it out. What I would say is that Bale did not want to be known as certainly not a left back, but not a left winger either. He wanted to play more of a sort of a forward role. And I think Mourinho didn't have that in mind for him. He didn't fancy him playing up front. And when Kane's been out, he hasn't trusted Bale to play up front. But then again, to be fair, his fitness hasn't been there. So if you've seen recent matches, you know, Bale's been coming in from the right-hand side. In the recent matches, that looks like it's suited him because he can pop in and move inside, get on his left foot. I think that there is the element that has been coached slowly and surely. And we've got a very good fitness team at Tottenham. And I'm sure they've been working really closely with him to get him to the stage. What I would say, guys, if you've watched the last few matches that he's been playing in, he seems to be moving a lot easier, not necessarily a lot quicker, but a lot easier in himself. He seems comfortable in himself. And when he's got control of the ball, his awareness of those that are around him, you know, he might still give the ball away here and there, but awareness and how he seems to be on the ball, to me, makes me feel that he's extremely comfortable. And that makes me feel that his fitness is returning. And the fact that he's had a few 70-minute games, I think he's had one 90-minute game. You know, he's getting there. But I think you're right. Mourinho is not necessarily the best coach for him.
I think as well, there's a thing, isn't it, that he's known for power and pace and, you know, free kicks, obviously, a lot of long goals. I think with Bale, you know when he's really in that groove, when, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying in terms of the movement chase, but also there's a deftness to his goal scoring. And I was really pleased to see, because I know he's had the first goal he scored on the weekend against Burnley was a bit more of a sniffer's poacher goal in the box. His second one, though, where it's just a really light, just sort of curls it round the defender and sort of the goalkeeper in at the far post. And is that's the sort of thing that he sometimes can snap at if he's not in that groove, if he hasn't found his rhythm. So when he's putting those little chances away, for all of the excitement, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I love the net busters as much as anyone, but that for me feels like there's just a little bit more guile and a bit more. And there was a highlights reel, which by definition tend to inflate the impression, you know, intended to make on the viewer that you get on YouTube. But he did seem to be finding just a few more of those little flicks and just little balls around the corner.
Absolutely. And it's the artistry returning to his game.
Feeling,
it was a great assist for Kane. Kane put it away brilliantly for the second goal, but I mean, what a pass as well. People don't mention that he's got that in his locker as well. You think about the pass for Ramsey, which led to the Robson Kanu goal against Belgium in the quarterfinal.
Love that goal.
If that's the reaction it engenders in an English guy in Kent, you can imagine what it does to us.
I've kind of just watched it back and back and back because, you know, Robson Kanu is just, who knew?
Not even him, but Leon's right. I mean, the ball from Bale is exquisite. And he's playing that ball from a, you know, relatively deep position as well. Well, I've long had this thing that I think, you know, once the legs do begin to go, I mean, it's inevitable as players get older. And, you know, he was playing at 16, let's not forget, and playing regularly as well for Southampton and Wales. So there's a lot of miles on that clock. And I think maybe he needs, I mean, you mentioned Hoddle, for example, is a perfect example of a player who just adapted his role, played more as a holding midfielder in the final days of his career. And, you know, plenty of players have that. We saw Mark Hughes do it, for example. I think he's intelligent enough to find another role. And I've honestly thought that actually to save the legs, maybe eke out another season or two, he should maybe just turn into a bit of an old-fashioned number nine. And so on that basis, I was really disappointed he moved to Spurs simply because, well, no one's going to dislodge Kane, to be fair. I don't think, you know, as much as I love Gareth Bale, I don't think Bale is going to dislodge Kane from that position. How do we see the season panning out? What would success constitute now from now on in? Now he appears to be in that groove from Spurs, and what would success look like from a Welsh perspective?
Spurs as a club, I'll talk about that very quickly, we're in cup competitions. If we can win the Europa Cup, that's a Champions League place. Failing that, you want to win fourth place. Unfortunately, because of the pressures of having the stadium that we've got, we are under pressure to get there. I mean, that's why Mourinho's in charge. As far as Bale's concerned, I tell you what I've found really heartening is the fact that when he's celebrating. You see the joy in his face when he's celebrating, and the way that he's celebrating with like Son and the other players. I didn't quite see that at Real Madrid, especially towards the end. And he is absolutely joyful. That game against Burnley at the weekend, the way that he felt part of the team for me was fantastic. And I still don't expect him to start loads of games, but I think we're going to, you know, we've got 13 Premier League games left of the season. I think he's going to play the majority of them. I really do, because I think he's put himself into a position where he's playing so well. But we've also got the Europa League games. We've got the League Cup final against Man City coming up. There are lots of chances for him to shine. And as we all know, Gareth Bale does like a cup final. Yeah. And I hope that that means that we keep him next season as well, because the original reports are that we've got the option to keep him for a second year. And for me, Gareth Bale getting his mojo back, which he's starting to do, and he's going to take that forward to Wales, isn't he? I mean, I know there's never any problem when he joins up with Wales. He feels at home there. He's surrounded by people who trust him. He gives his all for Wales. Whenever I've watched him play, he's... I wouldn't go as far as to say he is Wales, because I think that's unfair. But he is a big part of, obviously, the Wales success story in the last... since the European Championships, anyway.
Well, from Wales' perspective, Leon, what do we want Spurs doing with him? Just more of the same, or what? Well,
I look at it now. I mean, we've talked about him in terms of physical issues, like he was carrying an injury, and the way he's moving, it seems a bit freer, which is great. I also think Wales fans were really happy that he'd gone back to Spurs as well, because we thought we were going to see a happy Gareth Bale. At first, it seemed to be going very smoothly, and then we had this period where it didn't seem to be going, and now he's sort of come back into form, and he looks happy. Perhaps we underestimate, as fans, the sort of mental side of things a bit with players, because it's a delicate thing, and I mean, he would have lost his confidence to a certain degree at Real Madrid, just not being played by Zidane, knowing that the manager doesn't like you and doesn't want you there, it's going to affect you. And I think we just, from a Welsh point of view, we just want to see like him happy, having a laugh with his teammates, like all this stuff with the W and Moura doing the L, and him and Son seem to get along really well. It's great. And it just seems to be like actually enjoying being a footballer again, and that's what we want to see with the Euros coming up, and just keep fit. And it looks like he's gonna hit a groove now, hopefully, and score some goals and provide some assists. And Spurs have got some big games coming up, and definitely top four is still up for grabs. It's pretty wide open.
And Rich, we've got Belgium coming up soon. Just if he keeps on this trajectory, he's going to hit that game in that sort of form and groove that he could do some damage to a team like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's nice for him on a personal level. He looks like he's having fun at Tottenham. I mean, this is a guy at club level. I mean, he doesn't need he doesn't need to achieve anything there. It's kind of, as long as he's playing, I mean, this is a guy who's won everything, you know, multiple Champions Leagues. So if it's like a fun, nice diversion for him at Tottenham for this season, that's great. But from our point of view, where you kind of, I mean, when you see him score for us, he looks very, very different to when you see him score for Tottenham. Do you know what I mean? There's like a completely different level of intensity there. But yeah, I think if the trainer at Tottenham wants to keep his job, he will be playing Bale in the clutch games. But Bale will not be doing the defensive work. I mean, multiple Champions League winner, Bale is going to play how he wants to play. And this is kind of becoming apparent now that maybe the trainer at Tottenham has realised that, and he kind of has to play him now because of his form. But for us, I think, yeah, fit Bale against Belgium is really interesting, because we were kind of talking about like his different role. I kind of see him as like as how kind of Figo evolved when Figo kind of got older and kind of lost some of his power and his pace, essentially occupying the same position on the pitch, but as more of a kind of an inside playmaker, which I think Baylor's like massively suited to. So like where he'll be starting now is kind of right cutting inside at club level and probably international, but he'll just be doing everything but just slower and maybe more artfully and with more craft. So yeah, I think Belgium is a really interesting game. You'd probably say a point against Belgium. Oh, that's superb.
All day long. And brief aside, Roberto Martinez is getting linked with a Celtic job. I can't see it happening myself, but if they're having to scratch around for a new coach, that wouldn't be
great.
The worst thing for us, would it? 3 or 4 weeks out from that game. But yeah, or even if he negotiates something at the end of the season, it's still going into those games knowing that he's not around for the rest of that campaign. But let's leave that
There's more chance of John Hartson getting the Belgium job than there is of Martin at Celtic.
Like I said, it happening either, but no. Maybe not to quite that extreme. Okay, so that's the daddy then at Spurs. Let's go to the other end of the age range then. Jace, you picked up this lad, Joe Roden, Swansea lad from the Swans, for an absolute snip. I mean, 11 million. I'm of an age, obviously. I think, you know, you and I are similar in this regard. £11 million still sounds like a lot of money, but it's not. Not anymore. Swans fans were, I think, genuinely angry and justifiably angry at that price. I don't know the ins and outs of why it was set as it was, but that's what it was. He's had a few games. He has started against the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool, I noticed, which sort of surprised me. But made one high profile mistake. But Mourinho was really quick to praise him for his composure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
After that, which I thought was quite telling. What sort of impression has he made? Because we think an awful lot of him here, to the extent actually that he's probably, well, there's no probably about it, he's our first choice centre back now. And it's just a question of, for us, whether is it Chris Meppham, is it Tom Lockyer? But Roden is the main man in the middle of the back for us. So what's the impression he's made on Spurs fans?
Spurs fans absolutely love him. They really do. We've not seen too much of him. I think he's only played about, I think he's appeared about 9 games, most of those as a substitute. I think he's started 5 matches. That game you were talking about, Liverpool, he was fantastic in that game, and he made an error of judgment for the third goal, I think. And was it Mane's goal? The way he just carried on after that was fantastic. And what Spurs fans want is a sort of domineering central defender who can head the ball, who can defend. I mean, he's a big lad. He's a young lad. He likes to tackle. But if you've seen Spurs defenders recently, it's not always the case. And the Spurs fans that I've spoken to and the that I've been in contact with on social media and stuff like that, they all love him. They want to see him play. Unfortunately, Eric Dier's become a bit of an anti-hero at Spurs, in the sense that a lot of Spurs fans don't like him as a central defender. And they think he's a bit immobile. He's not that good at clearing balls and heading away. Whereas Roden has come in for a couple of games and he's just been dominant in central defence. He's been fantastic. So a lot of Spurs fans, myself included, think that he is the future. Toby Alderweireld, who's a great player and I love him to bits, he's getting on now. He won't be with us for much longer. We've got Sanchez, the Colombian, he's only a year older than Joe Roden, which I forget actually how young he is, but he does make mistakes. Whereas I think Joe Roden is pretty solid, not just in the sense that he's a big unit of a guy, but he's dependable. You mentioned a high profile mistake, but he doesn't put a foot wrong in the matches that I've seen him play. I mean, even when we've lost matches, he's been one of the standout players in defence. You know, it wouldn't surprise me personally in years to come if he's a future Tottenham captain. I think he's that good.
He's already captain Wales, of course. I think when they all went off in the game against Finland, wasn't it? The last game. Like only his 10th cap, I think. 23 years old, which is young for a centre back. So I mean, I've seen some people saying, "Oh, it's worrying. He's not getting the game time. He's not in the squad." But you know, how many 23-year-olds are playing centre-back no. week in, week out in the Premier League. There's probably not that many, really, are there? Especially a club that sort of aspires to get in the Champions League and that kind of stuff. I guess so someone like Alderweireld is someone you can kind of look up to and sort of, you know, use as a bit of a template for his game. Not like I think Dane, he really kind of needs that kind of player because he just seems to have it all. In terms of being a modern centre-back, I think, you know, we've just seen so many good performances from so far from Wales and we're just so impressed. It doesn't worry me too much no. that he's not getting the game time at Spurs at the moment. It'll come.
If I could just interrupt there for a second, I think this was always going to be a transitionary sort of period for him this season. You don't just step up, go straight into playing week in, week out for a top team like Spurs. And I think the fact is, you know, he will be training in a different way. The Spurs training facilities are just phenomenal. They really are. And everything he's doing, it is on a much grander scale. And he's training with players, as you say, Alderweireld, who can pass on that experience. But, you know, playing with the likes of our midfield and our forwards and the experience you'll get just from training with them is amazing. So I've always thought that this season would be one that he comes, gets a few games in the side, and then I think next season we'll see him really step up into that. And as I say, if people like Alderweireld do go on, you know, those chances will definitely come for him. I mean, what I like about Joe Roden, I think he's a brave player, and not brave in the sense that he'll stick his head in the way of somebody's boot, but he makes decisions. He makes them quickly, and he so far seems to, you know, apart from that one instance at Liverpool, he seems to make the right decisions. He's got good anticipation. He can actually pass. That will improve as well. Being at Tottenham, that will definitely improve. And he wins his tackles as well. I don't think he loses many tackles. And as I say, those aerial balls he's getting all day long. And he puts off people opposing attackers in the area. He is a very bright young star, I think, for Spurs. And you know, you already know that at Wales. He's already been doing it. I know he had rave reviews when he was at Swansea, which is obviously why we've snapped him up. And yeah, 11 million, an absolute snip. So I think the future is very, very bright for Joe Roden. And I think what's nice as well, and the caveat there, of course, is that, you know, Spurs fans are guilty of if a young player has a good game that they want him to start every game, as I think most football fans are. But Joe Roden's 23, and if he can bide his time and learn training with all of those players, he's going to be absolutely phenomenal.
I hope so. What's your thoughts on Roden, Rich? I can't remember. I'm trying to remember whether we've discussed Roden with you.
Well, I guess his problem is he plays for a trainer who didn't request him. But I think he's the best centre-back at Tottenham. And I guess if he gets another chance, hopefully he can continue to prove it.
You're talking about Mourinho, because I know a few Spurs fans. I mean, I was talking to, having a text conversation with my friend Joe the other day, who said he was very happy, very in capitals to see Bale stealing the show on Saturday against Burnley. That shows the sort of love that Spurs fans have for Bale, really. You know, just talking a bit more about what Spurs might do in the rest of the season. He said, I'm hoping for one trophy, Jose to get sacked and replaced by Nagelsmann, the Leipzig coach. Can't stand watching the football Spurs have played this season and last, generally, aside from the odd highlight like Southampton, Arsenal and Man City at home. I don't know any Spurs fans who want Mourinho to stay, no matter, you know, if he wins two trophies and gets him, you know, in the top four to boot. I don't think any Spurs fans want him to stay. They just Agreed. Don't like the football he's been producing for the most part. Maybe in the last few games, there's some signs that with the way that he's played Bale, Son and Kane up front, that they're going to be aim to score a few more goals. But even so, even if Spurs win every game from now until the end of the season, I don't think any Spurs fans want him to stay. Perhaps it's unlikely that he will stay as well, considering how ruthless Levy is as a chairman. I mean, Pochettino got into the Champions League final and was sacked 6 months later. And Pochettino was very popular with Spurs fans. So I don't think anyone was really calling for his head at that time. So Mourinho's got a job in his hands to keep his job, I would say.
Is there a chance with Roden that he can get into the Europa League squad? Is there another opportunity to refresh it between the phases, or he didn't get it?
I don't think so. I think that actually you're right. I think there may have been a chance, but I think because of how well our squad had done, he didn't then put him in for the second phase of that. That's what I'm led to believe. But you know, next season, Joe's big season
between the group stage and the knockout stage, they could have changed the squad then. But because Spurs got through and did well, he didn't want to change the squad at all. And now that it's been the round of 32, which Spurs got through really easily, they have a pretty kind draw in the round of 16. Dynamo Zagreb, isn't it? Could have been a lot worse than that. So, and Mourinho has an excellent record in the Europa League. So the Spurs are a pretty good bet for that competition, I think. You know, if Bale's going to play every game as well, like he has been.
You mentioned Eric Dyer. Jace had a look back. When Roden has started in a flat back four, he's been partnering Dyer. And if it's in a three, it's been Dyer and Davis pretty much, I think, every time. Obviously, if he's come on as a sub, it's been a bit different. Yeah. So that's probably a help as well, to a certain extent, having Ben Davis just outside him on the left. We're massive fans of Ben Davis. He is the archetypal, just 8 out of 10 every single game. Really a 9. The odd 7, nothing any less than that. And I've always had a bit of a thing that maybe Spurs fans don't perhaps fully appreciate him, but then maybe that's because I'm not part of that grouping, and I'm not seeing him on a routine weekly basis. But you know, he had a couple of years where he was battling sort of Danny Rose for the position. He's now got this Reguilón who does look an absolute class act. So what's the Spurs take on Ben Davis?
Pretty much what you've said, really. He is Mr. Dependable. I think Spurs fans would probably say he's normally a 6 or a 7, sometimes an 8. He never lets you down. He keeps going. He's always at it, but he's more defensively minded than he is attacking minded. And if you think about Spurs left and right backs over the years, you know, with Kyle Walker, Trippier, Danny Rose, players who have pace and can get forward. Davis has never had pace, not really, in the same league as those guys. He's not that kind of defender. He's not somebody who's going to go on a mazy dribble up front. He does very occasionally. He surprises you when he does it. But of course, you know, he's the kind of player that Mourinho likes, because he's going to defend and he's going to run back and he's going to try. I think a lot of people think of Dave squad player, not a first team choice, which I think is a bit sad. And we talked about this the last time we spoke, Russell. I really like him in a back three. I think he does well on that left side of a back three in central defence. And I think that's a role that, depending on what we do, he could play. But I don't think we're going to play that formation very often. I think Reguilón, who we got him from Real Madrid, and he is just a great player. And unfortunately, he's the kind of player that Davis isn't. He is a good defender, Reguilón. He can get out of position a lot because he's always bombing forward. But he's the kind of player that we like at Spurs, in the sense that he's an attacking fullback. You know, we've had it before where we've had Ben Davis at left back and Reguilón playing at left midfield in front of him. But I don't necessarily think that worked. So for me, love Ben Davis. He's dependable. He doesn't let you down, but he's not going to excite you. I think what a lot of Spurs fans feel is that he's very much a squad player. He can come in and do a job for you, but he's not going to get you off your seat.
He's put forward your case and justified fair. It. I think his role for Wales has almost become more important, given that he's, well, notwithstanding Wayne Hennessy in goal, but of the actual, you know, back four, as opposed to five, he's the most experienced. Chris Gunter has moved on, though, I think, in terms of the right-back position, for what is then a very, very young and inexperienced on the whole defensive unit for Wales. So I think he's become an even more important player. But he's kind of captain of your dirt trackers, though, isn't he? To import the British Irish Lions term, because he's been leading the team out in the Europa League games, isn't he? So this, yeah, there's clearly something that, you know, Marino... He does feel like a bit like a Mourinho player, I suppose. He's disciplined. He fulfills his duties, his responsibilities, probably to the absolute letter. So he's probably a trainer's dream in that regard. That reflects his standing in the club, I suppose, that he's got the armband for those games.
Yeah, I agree. As I say, he is so dependable that actually you take him for granted. And as we say, Mourinho loves the kind of player who will do what he wants them to do. Whereas if you're a little bit more of a maverick, I suppose, and you're not going to defend as much, he's not going to like you in there. But what I would say about Ben Davies is he has great leadership qualities, and he's got a good left foot on him, obviously. And he is the kind of player who, when he's on the team sheet, you'll hear some Spurs fans around me grumbling. We're not going to get forward and do this and do that. But he still gets forward. He just isn't as cut and thrust as other players. And really, some Spurs fans are about style over substance. Ben Davies gives you substance every time. It's been great him leading the team out, especially in the Europa League games, because he deserves it. He's been at the club a long time now, and he is a great player. I think he's very well respected in the change room. I think amongst the players, he's liked. And I know Bale takes the piss out of Joe Rodon a lot, actually. when I've seen him, he's always taken the mickey out of Joe Rodon. But I was reading an interview with Bale about Davies, just making him feel at home and obviously having the Welsh connection as well as the Spurs connection. So Ben Davies delivers more than just what he's doing on the football pitch as well.
And no doubt they all met up for cowl and Welsh cakes yesterday for St. David's Day.
Absolutely.
We don't take him for granted, do we, Rich?
No, I mean, I guess he's unfortunate. He doesn't really fit the template of a fullback in the kind of the current footballing world, really. I mean, it's a big contrast with over on the right-hand side with Connor Roberts and Nico Williams, who very much do fit the modern idea of what a fullback does. I like him at left sided of the three centre backs. And had he stayed at Swansea, Laudrup's idea that he saw Davies as a left sided centre back. So yeah, I mean, potentially if we're going to go in with three centre backs, he'd always be the guy on the left. I mean, as far as a left back, I think he's really reliable, really good. But I mean, you just accept his limitations. He's a really good crosser from kind of deep, but he's not going to be the fullback who's kind of getting to the byline, butting in and crossing like a winger would, like have on the right-hand side. But it's manageable. I mean, he's a really, really steady influence. And like, he's a big part of the group from like a leadership point of view as well. So yeah, big love for Ben.
He's only 27 and he's already won 58 caps for Wales, which is just like, up until recently, it would have been amongst us our top cap getters, I guess. obviously now, like since we've qualified and stuff, and we've had people like Gunter and Hennessy, just doesn't sound quite so impressive. But like to be, 27 and to have picked up 58 caps for Wales shows that he's consistent, and he's if he's fit, he'll always get picked, and he's rarely not fit. He doesn't get injured much. I'm a big fan of his. I thought he was probably our best player for the World Cup campaign, which where we just we missed out and lost that game to Ireland. But through the qualifiers, I think he was our best, most consistent player. If you look at it, he hasn't scored for Wales. He's only got three goals for Spurs. The modern fullbacks and people that Rich just mentioned, and Conor Roberts, he's already popped up with five or six this season for Swansea, hasn't he? And Micah Williams as well, as also a youngster who's also scored for Wales. Conor Robson scored for Wales. Yeah, you're not going to get that from Ben Davies, but Spurs fans, I know, just kind of seem to have a similar attitude to Davies as Jason does there. Just they like him. Just he's not a box office player, though, is he? But he's very reliable, and he's been a fantastic player for us. And, you know, whether he plays just in Europa League and cup competitions for Spurs and doesn't play much in the league or in the sort of supposed big games because they've got this other fantastic left back for Wales, no matter what his club form is over the years, that, you know, he'll be dependable.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And by the end of the season, he'll be closing on 250 appearances for Spurs. So that's no mean feat these days, yeah. Particularly the number of times players move and the rotation and everything else.
Yeah, but I think he's been at the club for about 7 years now. I think this is his seventh season.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a long time in football these days for a player to be there. I mean, this season he's made 28 starts across the board, which is not bad considering that we signed Reggie on and we all knew that he was this great player coming in. So I think he's had 13 starts in the Premier League and sort of 11 starts in the Europa League. So he's getting games. He's trusted, but unfortunately, as we say, you know, Spurs fans are of the of the thought he's not necessarily a top four player. But I think they need to remember that Spurs aren't really a top four side at the moment. And Real Madrid, they've got a clause to take him back at the end of the season if they fancy it. And so you just don't know what's going to happen in the future. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if in his 10th season at Spurs, you know, he's still playing regularly.
He's played in every Euro game of this season. And if he is captain in them,
yeah,
Mourinho continues on that path and Spurs do end up lifting the trophy, then it could be him doing the lifting.
For him, lifting it as a captain would be great to see for everybody, I think. Spurs fans and Wales fans alike. To just make a very quick point, I think the fact that the three of them are at Spurs is fantastic, because from what I've read and what I've seen is that there's a good friendship between all of them. There's a lot of banter, as you get anyway, but it's been great for Joe Roden this season to come to the club and for Ben Davies to be there. I think the fact that Gareth Bale's there is a big plus as well, but the fact that Davies is there, he's been there, he's done it. At international and at club level, that's great for Joe. And obviously that Swansea connection as well, hopefully, stands them in good stead. And I think the fact that Bale's gone there, I think Bale's got a really good relationship with Joe Roden. You might know more than that than I do. But he seems to have taken him under his wing a little bit. And as I said, he's constantly taking the mickey out of him whenever I'm seeing him interviewed about the way that Joe Roden dresses and his haircut and stuff like that. Which is all good, because it shows me that there's three happy players at Spurs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that can only be good.
Roden does have a unique dress sense, it has to be said. My favourite anecdote, Ben Davies related one anyway, at Spurs was, and I've said this before and I can never remember who said it. It might have been Dele Alli, but it may not have been. When it was one of those ones where they interview a player about, you know, who else is in the squad and, you know, who's the best dresser, who's got best taste in music, everything like that. And one of the questions was of, I think, Dele Alli, but it might have been someone else, who's the cleverest player? He said, oh, it's Ben Davies, because he's often got a book. I remember listening to that thinking, in many ways, football has changed, you know, hugely since we were young. But in one or two instances, it hasn't gone anywhere in 30 years. So yeah, bookish Ben Davies. Apologies to Dele Alli. I'm sure he listens if it wasn't him who said that. But I think
yeah,
he might
I remember.
Have been. It was Dele Alli, was it?
If you've seen the Amazon documentary on Spurs, the All or Nothing, the stuff with Dele Alli in it is comedy gold. So if you haven't seen it,
Richie, you expecting a favourable review for your latest book off Dele Alli anytime soon?
Well, I don't know. He's a big Fortnite player.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He's a really big Fortnite player. I'm not, but yeah, sure. I mean, I could send him a copy. That's fine. Maybe Ben Davies to read it. He's the guy who reads.
There we go. You get Parthian needs to get copies down to...
Yeah, sweet Ben.
Because he's been linked, isn't he, Dele Alli, with Paris Saint-Germain? And there's all sorts of museums and galleries that are going to be wasted on him then, surely, at Paris. Okay, yeah, sorry, Dele, not sorry. Okay, so Jace, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll have to do this again sometime. Maybe we can do a Grimsby Welsh episode where we can talk about
Tony Rees,
Darren Barnard, Danny Coyne. All the best for the rest of the season, both for Spurs and Europe's Food Town. Are they still Europe's Food Town, Grimsby? Always.
Always.
Yeah.
No, they hate Europe in Grimsby. Of course. What am I talking about?
Rich, Central. Good to listen to you again. Next time, Belgium and the Czech Republic.
It's two big games.
Exciting times.
Yeah.
And we'd expect these three Spurs players to be in that first choice 11 without any question.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Fitness permitting.
Obviously, we'll do a preview show ahead of those games. It's really good to see some rugby players, back in form or back fit at least. You know, Joe Allen back, Harry Wilson's found some form at Cardiff since McCarthy's come in, Daniel James at Man United, and of course Bale. Ramsey's been, is back fit at Juventus. I think they've got a game tonight. I haven't checked that. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of looking quite positive going into these games next month where we need to get a couple of points on the board at least.
And Kiefer Moore's in a really rich vein of form as well, isn't he?
He's looking really good.
Mick McCarthy couldn't believe his luck when he rocked up and saw someone as tall as Tony Cascarino or Niall Quinn. He must have thought, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. But you had him at
He had him at Ipswich. He bought him at Ipswich,
So he was obviously a Kiefer Moore fan.
So that's worked out pretty well. So yeah, we can cover all of that in the next couple of episodes. So Jace, once again, diolch yn fawr, thank you very much. And speak to you again sometime, I'm sure.
Cheers, guys.